why do people cheat?
The million-dollar question. Everyone wants to know, why do we cheat?
Hello, I'm here with Lauren LaRusso, author, psychologist, and her new book, Beyond Infidelity, How to Turn the End of Your Relationship into the Beginning of Your Life, is coming out in January. Lauren, welcome to Rock Bottom.
Thank you so much.
I have to say, I have been following your Instagram account, and I really like your content. I think it is very helpful in that you're building a community full of healing and hope and clarity for people. And I'm excited for this conversation, and I want to know a little bit about how you got started on this journey. I know that you're both a therapist and an author, as well as a betrayed partner, someone who's been through the pain of infidelity firsthand. Yeah. So why don't you tell me a little bit about your journey?
Absolutely. And it's been a journey. So I became a therapist in 2011 and just going about building my life, doing the things that all of us kind of grow up envisioning. You know, you go to school, I got married, we had a child, and I built a private practice. Now, all of that was happening at the same time that my spouse was having an affair. So my investment in our life together was ultimately, you know, about to blow up, and it did. So I discovered, you know, he was having an affair, and essentially the process that began at that time is exactly what I share now in my Instagram and what I walk readers through in Beyond Infidelity. So it's the crisis phase, the stabilization phase, trying to figure out what is anything, what is real, where to go, where to turn, how to get through this, if you can, what that looks like, right? All of those really overwhelming questions. Meanwhile, your nervous system is just completely hijacked. So it's just a very traumatic and intense and grief-stricken and confusing time. So I was going through all of that. And essentially, as a therapist, I was ill-equipped to understand what was going on inside of myself. And so I sat on my therapist's couch, and one day I said, this is crazy. I'm a therapist, and I don't even understand what I'm feeling, what is going on, what is right, what to do, how to help myself, how to navigate through this. And I'm a professional. So when I get through this, no matter what the outcome is, I'm going to come full circle and change that experience. I don't know what it's going to look like. I just had this, you know, vision of stepping into this space from a place of filling that void, because it's such a commonly experienced, devastating, you know, crisis in a person's life and in their marriage and family, no matter how it turns out, but how to move forward. Where was my guide? So essentially, I, over the coming months and years, cultivated and curated every last lesson that I needed in order to not only get through it, but to grow and lean into the lessons and evolve myself anew because of it for the better, and really harness that resilience. And this book is the culmination of that. So I started writing this book about 4 years after I was divorced. And it has everything in it that you would need to know that I just didn't. Because there's no one singular guide that's going to guide you right through it. So it starts with that crisis. What are you going through? What are you feeling? Why? And how do you help yourself? And then we go to those higher levels of self-awareness, self-actualization, and learning. And that's how you get to that place of thriving. So that's how I got where I am. And that's what's in the book.
Wow. It sounds like you really launched yourself fully into understanding this pain and this process, and that your book really charts the, you know, the whole arc of that, what that recovery process looks like for people. I would love to hear a little bit more about what you've learned as part of building a community around this. I mean, you must have spoken with so many betrayed partners, as well as I know a lot of your content is at kind of targeted towards people who are cheating and who are needing to have help in sorting that out. Tell me a little bit about how you've approached building a community around this work.
It's been really amazing and powerful because I decided to approach that community and that education from all three sides. So you've got the unfaithful married spouse. You've got what we refer to as the affair partner, which could, they could be married, she or he or they could be married, could be unmarried, could be single. And then you have the betrayed partner who may be unknowing and may be experiencing things that are confusing and don't make sense. And they may or may not ever find out, but there's all three different sides of that are having their own experience. And part of what I benefited so greatly from was to try to understand my now ex-husband's experience. When I was betrayed, the first thing I did wasn't actually about myself. It was more about what has he been feeling and going through and experiencing out there that I am just playing catch up to now? And like, why is it taking this landscape? And so that education is a huge part of what I share. And it's helpful because it helps betrayed spouses have a view of things that's more holistic. It helps unfaithful spouses have a view of things that's not just their own, but also isn't self-reinforcing the way affairs can be. Affairs can be extremely self-reinforcing. They're justified in order to help close that dissonance, that cognitive dissonance between a person's morals and their behaviors and choices. And then it helps affair partners who are in a relationship with someone who's not available and oftentimes is getting pulled back in, doesn't want to be there, wants to be with someone who's available, and is honestly just devastated and heartbroken. And all three sides largely end up devastated and heartbroken. And so it's really been, I think, what sets this group and community apart to be able to have a lens that's wider and deeper than just your own. I think the best healing happens when you're not only looking at yourself and your own experience.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense that if you're able to understand all of the different aspects of other people's experiences as you're on whatever side you are coming out and recovering from that, you're better able to understand how you fit into that. You know, as you're talking about just how much all three of these parties in an affair end up devastated, I'm wondering, back in the beginning, why do people cheat? Why does this happen in the first place? How does it kind of start as a almost runaway train?
The $1 million question. Everyone wants to know, why do we cheat? And for every person, there's a different story. There's a different backstory. There's a different experience. And so you can think about it in terms of there are things, people, experiences, feelings that might pull you out of your marriage, even though you weren't really, there was nothing really in your marriage that was pushing you out. And then you've got the marriage that might be pushing you out. You know, it might be a little bit emotionally unsafe or closed off or disconnected or cold or whatever it is, you know, I mean, that ranges on a huge spectrum as well. So there's like the push, there's the pull, there's just organic life circumstances. There's also personal traumas that we carry that, frankly, most of us, until there's a crisis, never really have the occasion to investigate as strongly as a crisis will hand us. And so ultimately, we're all walking around with these little subconscious blinders on. And we're doing outwardly the things that we've been taught and modeled is acceptable that we should be doing. But deep inside of us, there's a lot of complex feelings and internal experiences. And when those aren't shared and dealt with in real time, they very much can lead to a disconnection of self that has a person stepping into a relationship outside of their committed relationship, even though it's not something they ever thought they would do. And that's something that comes up in my community a lot. I never thought I would do this, and here I am. So the why is a huge part of the healing, and it's also probably one of the most, I don't want to say obscure ones, but, you know, why anything? You know, unless it's science, it's really all of our best estimation as to what feels true for us and what feels honest for us. And being courageous enough to look at ourselves and take that inventory and heal those parts. And that is on a huge spectrum from personality disorders to just met a colleague at work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely relate to a lot of what you're saying, from the crisis being the jumping off point to really addressing what's going on underneath the surface, to also just kind of how it might start and how you might feel. You know, one thing that I saw in a recent post of yours was really comparing the reality of the betrayed partner to the reality of the cheating spouse, where, you know, when an affair starts, the person who's cheating, like, their kind of reality, like, starts splitting at that point. But then one reason why for the betrayed partner it is so shocking is that, you know, there's been that time of the person cheating accepting and kind of understanding or fighting the split reality, and then for the betrayed partner it comes all at once. Could you talk a little bit about that compartmentalization process and why it's so painful, and also what, if someone who's, you know, listening is maybe experiencing that, what they can do to kind of get out of it?
Hugely important question, and hugely important part of why this is so devastating and confusing as a process to heal from. So what you're referring to, Ned, is the experience of the unfaithful, where there's sort of a before and after, but it happens before there's a before and after for the betrayed spouse. So there's the before the affair, and then the affair begins, usually in the mind, right? Some kind of connection or thought process that leads a person into one choice after the other. And it could take many forms and many shapes, but they begin to have an experience outside of the marriage that is completely out of the sight line and awareness of the person that they share their full life with and that they're building their life with. And so the split self that I often talk about is the self that's shared, that's experienced in the affair relationship, which is often a departure from what is shown and experienced at home. And then there's the person that you are at home and that version. And the two can't really cross. And so it ends up causing a tremendous amount of pain and anguish and anxiety, guilt, shame for the person who's having the affair. I like to look at it as kind of like a roller coaster. Like, first it's wee, you know, this is so much aliveness and excitement, and you're kind of high on life. And you also start to get into this like little bit of delusional space where you start to tell yourself stories that reinforce what you're doing in order to help you assuage that guilt and shame. And then over time, sometimes it's like, well, I can't stop. Or I'm married, but now my feelings about my spouse are changing. Or maybe I'm realizing things that were latent that I haven't dealt with. Or this person's expecting something of me that I can't deliver of them. It really puts you in a big conundrum. And so over time, all of those balls that you're kind of juggling by having the affair, unless you're so adept at compartmentalizing that you literally keep both worlds separate and you never the two shall cross even internally, which some people are capable of. But those of us who are a little bit more, you know, we're just more malleable, and it tends to either be revealed or discovered, because it's a lot to keep up. So in that moment of discovery, you know, now we really shift to the betrayed spouse whose world explodes at that moment. But over time, and especially as the affair gets deeper, they have likely been noticing and feeling shifts in their spouse. It's like a change in the temperature. The spouse may be depressed at times. The spouse may be angry, impatient, suddenly critical, suddenly high, you know, like a kite, suddenly disconnected and completely distracted. It can be very confusing to say, where have you gone? You know, but you're not here, and the routines are just off, and suddenly maybe they're gone a little bit more, or suddenly they're distant or on their phone or hiding things from you because they have to. And that's that process where a betrayed spouse starts to experience an internal conflict. Do I really want to know what's going on here? If I do, I'm going to have to do something about it, which is a huge deal and a huge crisis. And also, if I confront my spouse, there's a high likelihood that they're going to tell me that what I'm experiencing or observing is not correct. And then I'm in a place where I'm really disconnecting from my own self-awareness, intuition, and understanding of what's right and real in a relationship. And that's that mental place that both parties really end up in that's so distressing. So when I see couples who have been through an affair, you have the unfaithful who is psychologically very much gone because they have left the relationship before they left the relationship. And then you have the betrayed spouse who's really confused about their standards for a relationship because this isn't it, but this is also the person they share their life and family with. And so they find themselves oftentimes fighting for a relationship that they always believed they would get up and leave. So there's a lot of, if that ever happened, so there's a lot of real departure from what keeps a couple on the same track together in life within the bounds of like normalcy and an affair. Just, you know, really, if you're just too late as a betrayed spouse, oftentimes you're just too, it's too late. They're too far gone.
This is a tough conversation for me because everything you're saying is resonating with me through my own experience. And it's, you know, bringing up a lot. I want to try to keep it focused on, you know, what the work that you're doing, but it, you know, I just want to recognize that this, you know, this is so, I'm sure that your book and this work is so relevant to people because it's these feelings are so big and the betrayal is so common, and you know, everything that you're saying is really, you know, checking out for me as things that I experienced or things that we both experienced in the kind of recovery and healing process.
Sorry, just to jump into that emotionality I can see coming up for you, not to be too much of a therapist, but are you hearing a little back feedback?
No.
Oh, okay. I have some feedback on my end. So that experience, it lives inside of you forever. So I'm talking about it and you're feeling emotional. I'm writing this book and I'm feeling emotional. And part of recovery isn't a moving past it. It's a living with it. And so I just want to say that, right? So for everyone who picks up this book, who has been betrayed and wants to know how they can go on, and anyone who has betrayed and wants to know how they can go on, you have to find a way to incorporate it into yourself. It's a part of you now. And it is emotional. And I don't know that it ever stops hitting somewhere really deep inside when the time is just right, or when the conversation is just so, or the angle is a little too close to something that maybe we haven't really thought about in a while, but hit us really, really hard. So I just want to say that part of why this is so important is it's so visceral. It's such a visceral experience. And you live with it.
Yeah. That's, you know, I'm looking forward to getting to the end of your book about the, you know, how you move beyond it. But yeah, it is very visceral. You know, something that I was struck by when you were talking about the little changes that can happen is a concept I've heard before of the injury to a betrayed partner's gut, and the sensation of your, you know, your gut feeling. Typically, it's informed by all these tiny little, you know, micro expressions and little things that you notice not even consciously. And that creates a strong sense of gut and intuition. And then in a betrayal situation, there can be an injury to that because all of a sudden some little things aren't adding up, but maybe you can't quite understand it. Could you walk the audience through kind of what the biology is there and what some of the psychology is in terms of the like gut and intuition injuries that can happen?
Absolutely. And again, it's on a spectrum and it is different for every situation, depending oftentimes on the length and type of the affair and how that's handled. And what you're describing is that we know our spouses more than I think they are aware. We ever are aware that another person knows us, right? They're experiencing us from the outside all day, every day, intimately. Watching you, knowing your movements, knowing your expressions, knowing sometimes how you feel before you do, especially if you're an empath. And a lot of betrayed spouses are very empathically connected to their spouses and they are attuned. But spouses are attuned to each other. It's part of the bond. It's part of the attachment. And so when an unfaithful spouse begins an affair, they are not necessarily aware of those shifts that are indeed showing up, but they may believe that they are covering them up or concealing them well. But meanwhile, to your point, the betrayed spouse is beginning to pick up on subtleties. And oftentimes those subtleties just worsen over time as the affair goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And so first there's that gut shift. And I think that as a betrayed spouse, all of us can sit and say, when did I know before I knew? And I have a moment. And everyone who's been betrayed likely has a moment where they said, something isn't right here. And there's like a terror that strikes in your heart about what that could be and what that means for you and for your life and for your spouse. And then you kind of like wait and watch and you brush it aside, but you can't go straight to it, because if you go straight to it, this is what happens next, which is what I mentioned before. It gets explained away. It gets explained away. I'm tired, right? We haven't been intimate in a long time. I'm tired. You're always sick. The baby woke us up in the middle of the night. I had to work longer yesterday. You didn't seem like you were in the mood. Sometimes it gets blamed on the betrayed spouse as to those changes. And so what a betrayed spouse does, this is called gaslighting, which is a huge keyword, a buzzword, in psychology. Obviously in pop psychology recently, we've become more aware of gaslighting. And gaslighting is simply an inherent part of the experience of being with someone who is having an affair. Because unless they're like the person I mentioned earlier, who is completely compartmentalized, exists here at home and here in the affair, most people are bringing a new version of themselves and then having to explain it away. Explain it away. And so here's what the betrayed spouse does, which causes that trust injury, that self-trust injury. They, because their spouse is someone whom they categorized to trust, they accept their spouse's explanation over their gut feeling and concern that something is indeed deeply wrong and off. And so every time that happens, the betrayed spouse makes an observation or asks a question, are you okay? It could be so small. And it's explained away or sometimes blamed on the betrayed spouse as the reason. That puts the betrayed spouse in a moment of choice. What am I going to do with my knowing? And it is required for us to maintain the attachment bond of our marriage to dismiss our gut feeling in place of what we are being told. Time and again, you do that. And then when the affair is discovered, you don't know which way is up. You don't trust yourself. You don't know what's true. And you're more likely to continue to believe the person who is betraying you after that point, because you have lost such a sense of reality that it leads to a lot of confusion for betrayed spouses. And so when people say, like, why didn't you just get up and leave? I don't know what anything is anymore, because I've been observing it inside myself and then observing it outside myself and being told I'm wrong. And then I've been replacing it with another explanation that was false all along. Now I'm all screwed up in the head. It's actually a trauma and abuse of its own that leads to, you know, the psychological trauma that leads to the fawn and freeze response specifically, which is a trauma response where you fawn, which means you over caretake the person who's hurting you, or you freeze, which means you are completely confused and you have no idea how to move forward. And that's where a lot of betrayed spouses spend a lot of time, just confused and completely frozen.
Wow. That's devastating.
It is.
Something that helped us move forward and start the process of recovery and healing was preparing a disclosure document in a therapeutic setting. Could you talk a little bit about that and kind of what that the turning point can be in that situation?
I'm not someone who uses something like that, so I'm not sure what kind of recovery program maybe you were being guided by, but I can speak to the experience of disclosure itself. What I would imagine the value of a disclosure document would be is to, in one fell swoop, come clean about the truth and the whole truth. And what it would do for a betrayed spouse is ease the fear that there's more and hand them entirely what there is to deal with, good, bad, ugly, everything in between. Is that what your experience of it was, basically?
Yeah.
And so it's terrifying, obviously, for the unfaithful spouse, because when you're having the affair, you're doing it under the guise that no one will ever find out. And then when it's revealed, you're essentially tracking as much as you can remember about what you've done. And what I experience in my practice is that for couples who are trying to stay together, the haunting question of is there more is a huge deterrent to moving forward, because trust has been shattered completely because you've just been lied to for a really long time and deceived for a really long time. So how do I know that you're telling the truth now? And that's why betrayed spouses ask so many questions, because the unfaithful knows what's been happening the whole time. They were doing it. They were there. But the betrayed spouse is just playing catch up, and then they're taking a hindsight inventory about what might have really been going on while they thought they were living a version of their life that had one story in it. So there's like a matching process, and the trauma response is that fragmented sense of your own past and your own reality. So complete disclosure can be valuable, because when a spouse doesn't know that they have the full picture, it's really hard to move forward, because there's always the question of, what am I really living with? Is something going to pop out later that's going to make my choice to continue to stay here or recommit to this marriage something I regret? Is there something that I can't accept that happened, that they're concealing from me, that that is going to come out to hurt me later? So the value of that is that you get the whole inventory, and then you can make decisions about how to proceed from a place of, I guess, as much mutuality as you possibly can on the facts. At the same time, a full disclosure document is devastating. So disclosure can be really also very devastating as much as it can be healing. And so I always recommend that people proceed with as much responsible honesty as they can, but these are devastating circumstances. There's no getting around it.
Right. I recall it being something that was only to be done if you wanted to continue some sort of a relationship with the person, whether it's a marriage or a friendship or a co-parenting relationship, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot to take in. You know, something that you were saying before about the kind of what is going through a cheating partner's mind and this cycle of kind of highs and lows, almost like an addictive cycle that kind of makes someone feel like they can't stop. You know, what would you say to, if someone's listening to this and they're having an affair and they want to stop, but they don't feel like they can, or, you know, how would you kind of, you know, I know this is a big part of your community and your coaching. How do you address that situation from the unfaithful spouse's point of view?
It's recovery work. It's recovery work and it's grief work. And I think that people don't, excuse me. I think when nobody gets into an affair understanding or even being aware of what it's going to take to get out of it. And that's something that I educate about a lot. And so what you're bringing up is that a person needs, just like going to any kind of recovery, you need to make the decision that you're out of control. You are not in the driver's seat of your life anymore. And you are preventing yourself from being in alignment and an integrated person, right, with integrity. And so when I use the word integrity, I mean integrated in terms of all parts of myself are in one place at one time. That split self is not an integrated or aligned self. So you need to decide, I'm tired of this, and I'm willing to endure the loss and the pain and the grief. It's like a breakup, but 1,000 times worse, because it requires the kind of recovery work of withdrawal from something that's actually in a reward pattern that's the most addictive reward pattern known in the field of psychology, which is a variable or intermittent reward pattern. What a variable reward pattern is an unpredictable reward that you get. So in lab rats who don't know when they press a lever, if food's going to come out, they will press the lever until they die. Same for affairs. The variable reward of an affair, the unpredictability of the contact, the text popping up, the high, the cortisol rush, the adrenaline, all of those chemicals that are so oxytocin that are coursing through your system all of a sudden, that's what you want to hit. You want to hit and you want to hit and you want to hit. And just like the rats, you're not present anymore because all you can think about is when you're going to get the next hit. Now you're in an addiction cycle where you can't stop without committing to actual recovery work, which is I'm going to go through the withdrawal of all of those neural pathways coming back down out of that space where they're looking, they're firing all over the place, wanting to be eased by the reward. So it is such a powerful system that gets ignited in our brain, in our chemistry, in our neural pathways. And ultimately, it's full withdrawal and the grief of losing that attachment and that connection. And it's also a living, breathing person who's still out there, right? This isn't rat food. This is a person, and you have bonded to them and you have shared things with them, and they know you in many ways, differently maybe because of the experiences you've had together. It's very, very powerful on many different levels. And so no one's prepared for the amount of grief that you have over losing that connection by making that choice, and the recovery feelings like worse than death. And that's what keeps people coming back. They try to stop, they go back. They try to stop, they go back. And it's a vicious cycle. And then oftentimes it gets discovered somewhere in that space of, I was trying to end it.
Yeah. I can relate to that. I know for me, part of working through it was a complete dopamine reset of, you know, not even being in a place where I'm not even having access to phone or computer or, you know, any sort of contact. And I can really understand what that's like, having lived through it. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the betrayed partner's experience, the unfaithful partner's experience. Talk a little bit about the affair partner's experience, because you mentioned that as a kind of a third piece of the puzzle. What are, if someone is listening and that is kind of the situation that they find themselves in, what is your kind of advice to them?
Yeah, it's such a mess, and it really depends on their circumstances. There are affair partners who are really trying to end their role and keep getting sucked back in, like I mentioned before. There are affair partners who are married who, when the affair is discovered, that betrayed spouse may reveal it to the unknowing spouse of the affair partner. Sometimes even their children. It happens a lot. I see that a lot. They just blow everything up on the other side. Someone could get pregnant, right? So an affair partner might get pregnant. There's all kinds of outcomes. Sometimes I deal with affair partners pulling the married person out and out and out again. They're really playing to that addictive cycle. So it depends. And just like none of these parties are all the same, same with affair partners. But ultimately, an affair partner has to ask themselves, what are their goals for a relationship? What do they want and need from life? And what inside of them, just like a betrayed spouse or an unfaithful spouse, what inside of them is keeping them in this space? What are the self-reinforcing beliefs, the limiting beliefs, the stories they're telling themselves about why they're here in this space? And granted, it's not all clean. It's not like affair partners are broken and that's why they're there. They're often there because they've been promised that they're with someone who's very unhappily married and that that person plans to leave. It happens a lot. And they begin a relationship based on a lot of hope and possibility. And then the catch-22 is that the affair actually prolongs that marital, the addressing of the marital issues, because suddenly the needs are being met on all sides by the unfaithful spouse. And there's more confusion and inner conflict and lack of clarity about what really began what. And then there's guilt. So now I feel really guilty. Like I can't have these conversations with my spouse because I know I'm hiding something that they don't know about. It really screws everything up. So my advice to an affair partner would be do what you can to insulate and isolate yourself, because if someone is available to be with you, then why don't they come be with you when they're available? But there's a lot of promises that go on about, well, I need you to motivate me, or this connection is showing me what I want. Somehow it creates a codependent relationship where one person is dependent on the other for what they need. And it's just not true. It's just not true. And it just sucks the life out of everybody. And so it's hard, but I have a whole course that helps people reprogram their brain around being in a relationship with someone who's unavailable for that reason.
Wow. And sure, in some cases, someone could be an affair partner while being an unfaithful spouse. Like you're experiencing multiple aspects of this triangle at the same time, potentially.
Absolutely. All the time. Yeah.
Well, let's point now to talking a little bit about your book and some of the tools to start this process of living, you know, you said it, how to turn it your end of your relationship into the beginning of your life. So let's kind of move out of the devastating feelings of being in the affair and what happens in that crisis period and moving forward to, you know, how is someone eventually going to turn this into a new beginning for them?
Yeah. And I think that education is so important, because if you don't know what you're dealing with, it's very misguided as to how to help yourself. So it's so helpful and important to understand the dynamics that are underneath it. And this book is not focused on affairs for a reason. It's focused on your self-healing. It's focused on understanding what's going on inside of yourself and how to parse through that self-care and basically wrap the tourniquet around yourself to stop the bleeding long enough to begin that slow but steady process of healing, which is not linear at all, but it requires resilience and grit, which is basically continuous effort in the face of challenge, because you want to recover. You don't want this to define you. But when you have experienced betrayal, there's two versions of yourself. There's the before, the version of yourself that maybe was a little naive, maybe didn't believe that that could happen to you, maybe believed that your marriage was everything you thought it was, or your spouse was everything you thought they were. And in a moment of betrayal being revealed, that just explodes, that innocence and that belief and that future also, that imagined future that we so sustain ourselves on, also explodes. And so part one, version one of yourself, was the first version. And now you're in this great in-between, which is the first part of the book, which is understanding what you're going through so that you can tend to yourself. And then it's where do we go from here? How do we begin to become the second version of ourselves? Well, first of all, our second version has all these new tools just by learning how to handle the crisis. Just by going through part one, you are stronger, wiser, and more self-attuned than you ever would have been before, because you've been required to be. So now we're using a whole new tool set, We're learning to self-trust again. We're learning to self-rely again. And we're learning to self-regulate and self-soothe. Many things that we were not taught. Excuse me. So as you build yourself back up, sometimes you now have to rebuild your life anew. And really, healing from infidelity is an integration into a new version. A person who's different because they're wiser. They're more emotionally mature. And they are now more self-attuned. So the life you build after infidelity is much more honest and self-knowing.
Because you've had experiences in the past where you're kind of living out of alignment, and now having gone through that crisis, you're able to build something new that's much more connected to, you know, who you are and your sense of self. Do you find that
blows everything up? So you have to reconstruct yourself anew. You can't go back to what was. Right?
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about all three of these parties' experience in the crisis phase. Walk me through the next step in the healing journey. You know, let's talk about really how to turn the end of your relationship into the beginning of your life. And I imagine this is something that is not just geared towards a betrayed partner, but really kind of all aspects, all parties here. What are some of the things and tools that you advocate that your readers use to help build something new?
Yeah, it's that idea of, you know, don't let any experience go to waste. Let it be a lesson and let it be the catalyst for growth and change, positive change. So the idea is that version one of you is kind of asleep behind the wheel. You're doing a lot of what's been modeled for you, what you think you should be doing, who you think you should be being. And version two is a version of you that's a lot more honest and that starts to lean into what you really want and choosing into your life very proactively as you rebuild yourself and what you want your life to look like. And so part two is, you know, don't just survive infidelity. Don't just survive what happened. Thrive beyond it, because you now have learned so much more about yourself. You have leaned into every pain point, as it's like the quote, the cracks are the place where the light enters you, right? All of those pain points, those are your greatest trailheads to your areas of growth. The places that you feel the most resistance, the most grief, those are your trailheads about what is most important for you to learn here. And so ultimately, going through something like a crisis like this, it requires you to let go of everything. And when you think that you've let go, you need to let go again and again and again and again. I'm now the kind of person who's like, yeah, why not? Or, well, that stunk, but I just was talking to my partner this morning. I'm like, I slept really badly last night. He's like, I'm so sorry. I said, well, I survived on 4 hours of sleep for 3 straight years, and that proved to me that I can. So I'm pretty sure there's nothing that I can't get through now. And you trust yourself anew because you're not so scared of life anymore. Okay, I lost everything. I lost everything I cared about, built. My past, my present, my future was all in the balance. And now I'm not just going to let things happen willy-nilly. I'm going to really consciously, proactively, self-connectedly make choices about my relationships, about how I show up in the world, about who I am, where I am, what I'm doing, who I'm with, how I, you know, all of those things. You have the power to transform when you start really self-reflecting and asking yourself, what do I want for the first time? And I think that for a betrayed spouse, the infidelity can actually be so freeing in the devastation, because they may have not asked themselves what they really want. And now it's freed them too into a space where they get to choose again. And all of that does live alongside tremendous loss. And so that's really what the book culminates in, is the idea that we were talking about before, where it is a both and. This has happened to you and this has happened for you. And you better harness that and ask every step of the way, how is what happened to me also happening for me? What's here for me? what's mine to learn? Because if you don't learn those lessons, they're going to keep coming back for you. Wherever you go, there you are. And so be determined, be tenacious about growing through this experience really courageously. And it's not easy. I remember my friend showing up at my door one day. I was like 4 years after the, you know, the betrayal. I wasn't divorced. It was a long process. And so the timeline's all a little murky, but I remember just saying, I am so tired of being resilient. I am so tired of learning. I am so tired of being on my own, of building everything anew, of not being certain, of all of the things. It's exhausting, but that's that process of rebirth. It's painful. And then ultimately where I lead the reader to in this book is a place in which you start to notice that you have a new lightness in your life. You're not glad about what happened. It will always hurt you somewhere deep inside. It will always be a devastating grief. And you cannot imagine who you would be and what your life would be if it hadn't. And that's that duality that we have to be able to hold. I cannot believe that that happened to me. And I cannot imagine my life if it hadn't. And you're suddenly living from a place where you're leaning into joy, where you're cultivating joy, where you're feeling more expansive inside of yourself, where you're asking yourself simple questions like, what do I want? And how can I give that to myself? Those are really empowering, generative feelings that marks and distinguishes the people who heal and grow after a trauma from the people who wither and atrophy and get smaller after it. It's that expansiveness. It's that generative ability to turn something bad that happened into something that is a strength. And that's,
I really like,
that's what we do here. Yeah.
That idea of the duality of both and thinking, it seems very complicated and hard to, you know, to hold, but it seems like for someone that can both process the loss and the trauma, as well as then take the, okay, well, what does this mean for me? And what does this, you know, how is living as a, in a integrated whole person to make, you know, new choices about what you want in life. It seems like a really powerful idea. I'm curious, how does the process for the unfaithful spouse differ from the betrayed spouse in this moving forward way? Or are they quite similar where they're both processing trauma and loss as well as building a new sense of self?
Yeah, it's different in some ways and completely alike in others. So every clinician, every person, lay person who has read Beyond Infidelity in an early copy has said, this book can be the guide for all transformation. And whether you're unfaithful, whether you've had no infidelity at all, it's handing you a roadmap for personal evolution to be more self-attuned and more authentic. And so the journey for an unfaithful person is to return to self-honesty, to learn to forgive and accept yourself. So acceptance is a huge part of healing. It's honestly, it's everything. And so for a betrayed, they're really learning how to accept something that was not their choice or their doing. And for the unfaithful, they have to learn to accept that they have perhaps acted outside of their value system, that they were capable of something that they maybe didn't believe or had judged other people about. That they have to find empathy and compassion for the version of them that transcended their values and who they thought they were. And then they have to do that work to integrate that back into their self-concept. We've all done things we're not proud of. Now, this is one of the biggest ones that can be so harmful because it exists within a relational construct. So it's a relational trauma. It's a relational attachment wound, which is the most harmful kind. And yet, you were not likely doing it to hurt your spouse. You were doing it to give yourself something. And so making sense of that collateral, learning to work through the shame and grief, those are the predominant feelings that an unfaithful spouse needs to work through. But then the questions become, how do I heal the parts of me that, you know, are coming up for me around this? How can I see what I didn't see before? And how can I try to live more honestly just moment to moment? There's no one grand truth. There's only asking yourself to be honest with yourself moment to moment, to be the partner that you want to be in the world to be the person that you want to be in the world. And all of us can only return to that or evolve ourselves to that. We can't undo what's happened. So I think this book is valuable for anybody. And I actually think it's really valuable for unfaithful spouses because it can be so confusing not to understand the experience of the other. And that lack of empathy and that lack of real putting yourself in the other's experience and not understanding and only looking at your own experience, that's what keeps people siloed. Mm-hmm. And that's what prevents people from really healing. They end up just moving past it. They don't really understand the true holistic experience of the other. And I think this is just a huge education in that to give you empathy. I may not understand what you're feeling, but I can empathize with it. And I can see how that would be the case. I didn't experience that myself, but I can see how that would affect you that way. That empathy is life-changing. And I think that experiencing infidelity has the opportunity to make all parties more empathetic. I know I am. I mean, I always was an empath, but I am so much more empathetic now, so much more tolerant, so much more easygoing now because you just get broken wide open. And that happens on all sides. It's the best of what can happen on all sides. I hope that for everybody.
So you're saying that by getting broken wide open and really working to try to understand the other person's experience, that's kind of a crucial step in towards like building more empathy and to kind of start that healing journey yourself.
Yeah, because honestly, understanding the experience of the other is how we develop compassion. And we can't have compassion for ourselves if we can't have compassion for other people and vice versa. And compassion isn't excusing what they did or what happened, but it's understanding that that person's a flawed human as well and understanding a little bit of what they're going through. And it really helps you expand your experience instead of just being so tunnel vision, which can keep us stuck in our healing for a lot longer because it's a self-reinforcing story, even for the betrayed. You know, we tend to put on repeat how we've been harmed, but that's not helping us grow. That's just reinforcing the victim story, which you earned, right? I mean, you earned it. But there's a lot of other stories to have and to grow for yourself. And that's what I want everyone to gain from this book.
Yeah, that idea of sleepwalking that you mentioned earlier seems really relevant, where it's like after you've kind of completely everything has changed, then you really have to make those choices completely anew. And, you know, I think learning how to accept the victimizer kind of role and then also move past it into, okay, what is the future? I know for me that I think where I'm at is learning to digest the past and to accept that I did what I did and that it hurt not just my partner, but, you know, so many members of the public. Yeah. And then to try to understand, like, okay, well, what were the ways that I wasn't living according to my values and kind of sleepwalking through life and maybe just doing what was expected of me, and what chance do I have to, you know, do that differently now? And that's, I think it's a journey, of course, but I think from my own perspective, something that has been, you know, a positive.
Yeah. And that's transformative for everyone, because if you have an experience like that and you don't do anything with it, that's where it stays. But if you have an experience like that and you metabolize it and you metabolize it again and again and again and again on both sides, now we're doing something with something that's been harmful. And that's healing. That is healing. That's what it is. Healing isn't moving past something. Healing isn't not feeling it anymore or dealing with it anymore. Healing is metabolizing your pain again and again and again and evolving as a person. And so I'm sure that it's, you know, it's healing for any betrayed spouse to see an unfaithful spouse take personal responsibility for their own healing and growth. That's very healing for the person on the other side. And then it's also very freeing and healing and ease, you know, a little bit easeful when you see a betrayed spouse, you know, thriving anew. You're not glad about what happened again, but you're using it for something meaningful in your life. And there's nothing that humans being that's more powerful that human beings do than create meaning out of devastation. That's that's everything.
You know, that this podcast was a way for me to create meaning out of my own devastation. So thank you for joining me for this conversation. You know, I as you're kind of describing this really nice vision of how someone kind of integrates themselves, I'm wondering what you would say to someone that feels stuck.
Feeling stuck is a sign that you're coming up against an area of work for yourself. So I was stuck so many times, and what I needed to remember was that there is no such thing as being stuck. This is not me being quoted. This is a quote. There is no such thing as being stuck. It's only that you're continuing to orient yourself the same way or see things the same way. And so our most valuable resource as humans is the ability to try on and get flexible with the way that we are experiencing the thing that we're stuck about. Because there's a million other ways of interpreting things. There's a million other ways of orienting towards things, of feeling things, of doing things. We put the limitations on ourselves that make us feel stuck. We attach to things that make us feel stuck. And so I would encourage anyone who feels stuck to ask why. And then they're going to come up with a lot of reasons. I'm too fat. I'm too old. I'm too skinny. I'm too young. I'm too stupid. I'm too smart. I can't. No, that's what you're telling yourself. But the truth is that if we're courageous enough to set some of those aside for a minute, everything opens up for us. We're all capable of limitless things if we just allow ourselves to reorient to the possibility of everything, which is very hard to do. We're very controlled people. We want to know the path. You know, we want answers. We want answers. So the practice, the flex there is opening yourself up and saying, what am I not considering here that I don't want to consider because it's uncomfortable or scary for me or changes my life in a way that I'm not ready for? It's okay. You don't have to do anything. You just have to be curious inside of yourself.
Wow. That's a really interesting way of looking at it, where it's, you know, not just like there's something keeping you stuck, but that there's actually a way around it by kind of looking at yourself.
Yeah.
I think it's about time we have to wrap up, but one final question, and thank you so much for this conversation. I mean, I'm sure that your work impacts so many people, and I hope that everyone listening has gotten something that they can take into their own lives. Again, Beyond Infidelity, How to Turn the End of Your Relationship into the Beginning of Your Life by Lauren LaRusso, out January 6th. Everyone check it out. A final question is, what's something you would say to your younger self?
That everything you chose was exactly the way it was supposed to be. Because you, past Lauren, could only know at that time what you knew. And all of us can only do with what's available to us in our awareness at that given time. And everything happened the way that it was supposed to and will continue to happen the way it's supposed to. Not because I'm a bystander, but because that's the way it is, you know? And so just have that compassion for my past self. That's what I would say.
That's a real sense of self-grace and self-compassion to, you know, look at the past, not with a ton of regret or of self, you know, beating yourself up, but really seeing and trying to give compassion to yourself of, at that time, you or I was making the choices that you made for the reasons that you made, and maybe they were flawed or maybe they were bad, or but at the time it was what you chose, and that's all you knew at the time.
There are no losses, because there's always something to learn. Right. Mm-hmm. There's always something to be gained by what you have to learn and the growth that you have, and then what you have to offer the people in your life because of that growth and wisdom and insight. and strength that you've cultivated. So nothing is lost. Nothing is ever lost. It's all still inside of you. And you carry that forward, but you can't judge your past self through the eyes of your current self. It's all about self-compassion. And Brene Brown says, you know, a life without regrets, what is that? Regrets are realizing that you have things to learn, that right. that you are growing and you're still alive and you're learning. So regrets are the part of you that have learned something and are looking back with those eyes and that perspective on the version that wasn't aware yet. And that's okay. That's part of living.
Yeah. Well, Lauren, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This was a wonderful conversation. I appreciate you having me a lot.